This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. Got a lot of good stuff done this week. I'm not coming in tomorrow, I don't think. I hope I'm not coming in tomorrow. Gotta do some writing this weekend. I have started book 7. Was able to get a lot, before we talk about that, was able to get a lot of good things done this week. Things are coming together for our first big project using this paperless thingy tool that we bought, K2, Business Process Management System. That seems to be going fine. Has a few little quirks in it, but that's okay. Nothing we can't program around. So it's all working out fine so far. We're actually going to start releasing it to some of the users to give it a try. So far, so good. We'll just see how the rest of it goes. We got all the beta books mailed and delivered this week for book 6 of the Windfall series. So that is 6 down, 18 to go. But that does mean we are officially 25% done. I still have to do the production version of book 6, but the book 6 is written. So I am 25% through with the writing. So we'll see how everybody likes this one. I like it. That's all that's really important. So, you know, it's pretty much the way it's going to be, but I will fix bugs and mistakes, and if somebody finds something to nitpick, I'll probably go in and fix that. But as far as the storyline, yeah, that's what we're doing. Got started with book 7 this week, because I got all the beta books ordered and everything, and so while I was waiting, I did some just housekeeping stuff to start the next book, book 7. Going, and then Sunday was the official first day of writing for book 7. Not that I actually knew what the book was about at that point. I had just enough to get started. By the way, it is a gorgeous, gorgeous day here today. It's just beautiful. The sun is shining. There's a cool breeze. Oy. I walked outside. I had an afternoon meeting and walked outside and I just thought, wow. Maybe I can just convince him we should have this meeting outside. Standing, squinting in the sun, getting some vitamin D. It's beautiful. Beautiful today. Anyway, so as of Sunday, I wasn't exactly sure what the book was about. I kind of had some fleeting ideas of possibilities. I had picked the parable of the flowers of the field, and I was going to call the book A Field of Grass, because there's just a little bit of interesting things in that parable. How Jesus phrases it, and he's basically telling people, look, don't worry. Don't worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear. And he says about the birds, he said, which of you, by worrying about those things, can add an hour to your life? And then he says, and looks at the fields and the grass, and look at their beautiful flowers and how they are arrayed in splendor. Even Solomon isn't arrayed like this. And this is the grass that's just cut down and thrown into the fire. What's really interesting about the parable is Jesus wraps it up by saying, so don't be concerned about tomorrow, because tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough troubles all of its own. So, you know, this is the scripture that seek first the kingdom and all these things will be added to you. This is what we, you know, pull this scripture out. And we quote this a lot. But just looking at that scripture in isolation, And then just saying, well, these things are what you'll eat and wear and drink. You can't come away with this impression that what Jesus is saying is, you know, if you seek the kingdom, your whole life is going to be hunky-dory fine. And you're not going to, you're just going to have all your needs taken care of and you won't ever. And I've heard it in essence preached that way. And yet, like, right after that verse, as Jesus is wrapping up the parable, he says, so don't worry about tomorrow and the troubles that it'll have, because today has enough troubles on its own. So he's not really saying that if you seek the kingdom and you get these things added to you, that that means you're automatically exempt from trouble. So I was going to kind of work on that and come up with that. I thought, well, that'll work. So I write all day Sunday. I get my 3,000 words in. You know, it's going pretty well because it's a lot of just exposition, you know, what happened since last time, and I'm going through all that stuff and setting up, and it's working, it's fine. And then, of course, I'm getting to the place where something's supposed to happen. Well, the books came in on Monday then. I'm supposed to do 1,000 words on Monday, but the books came in, and I knew the books were coming in. And so Monday was set aside packaging up the books and buying the postage and getting everything ready to take it to the post office, because that's hours of work. So I got all that set up, done, and then I went out to eat with a buddy on Tuesday because of we missed our normal Tuesday with my episode with the migraine for the first time. So I got home late, and so I just edited up what I had written on Sunday. Got about 300 words in. I'm supposed to get 750 in on Tuesday. So, you know, now I'm 1,500 down. But what was really interesting on Tuesday morning is I was heading into that writing, knowing when I got home I was going to do some writing. And I was to the point where I kind of needed to know where things were supposed to be going. And I would have just been happy to know, like, what's going to happen in the next chapter. But I was just kind of running through the possibilities. I had lots of possibilities. I knew I wanted to bring some characters back together that had been apart, and I thought, you know, get them back together. There's a really interesting mix this time. There's a lot of rub in there of personalities. There's things you definitely can do with all of that. And so I was like, yeah, we got to get them back together. But it just didn't feel right. And so I was running the possibilities. Well, could it be this? Could it be that? How does this feel? How does that feel? How does this feel? And one of the thoughts that occurred to me was, I wonder if I've got the wrong parable. I thought, well, what other parables are there out there? And I started thinking about it a little bit, and then all of a sudden, what about the parable of the 10 virgins? Yeah, that's a pretty interesting parable. And so, as I was driving, I looked up the parable of 10 virgins and started looking for some alternate interpretations of it, and I stumbled on this guy. He had this big, long interpretation of it, of what not to think the parable of the 10 virgins was about, and I was reading through this, and I was like, yeah, there's some pretty good stuff in here. And then, as soon as I, like, opened my brain to that possibility, oh, man, it was just like clickety-clickety, bang, 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 bang. So I think, at this point, I know what book 7 is about. Yay! Which is good, because I already know what book 8 is about. Very clearly, because it is the last book of the first octet. It'll be over. That means that once I get book 8 done, it'll be over 1,000,000 words in the first 8 books. So that's fun. That's fun. So, you know, I was struggling. Not struggling, but it was gnawing at me all weekend. What is this book about? What is book 7 about? What is book 7 about? And, you know, I needed to get the books packaged up, ready to go, but as I'm in the car with all the books ready to go, driving down, you know, I just start thinking, and all of a sudden it's think about this, think about this, think about, and then you can do this. It's just amazing. So I feel like the fog has already lifted a little bit in the forest this time, which is fun. Obviously, there's a lot of details that I don't have in yet, but there's some really interesting mixes that if I can make this work, I think I'm going to enjoy this. So we'll see. Anyways, so it was fun. It was fun. And I had a fun conversation this week yesterday with a friend. I've been praying with this friend for months now about a job. Months and months. And, you know, there's just been one seeming obstruction after another. And I talked to him yesterday and he has a job offer. So, yay! You know, and all the pieces are lining up. And it even seems at this point to make some sense why it took this long. Why it needed to take this long. Because there were other pieces in motion. Those pieces needed to get in place. And now that those pieces are in place, and they were other completely different parts of his life, it's really interesting to watch this stuff. Because as we've been talking these last several months, it's always about, yep, hold on. It's gonna work out, just hold on. So, fun stuff. Anyways, you know, I feel like I'm talking about old news today with our topic for the day because stuff moves so fast anymore that, you know, a week ago, week and a half ago, this was a hot topic, and now all we're doing is talking about nuclear options and breaking filibusters and the Gorsuch nomination, and this topic has completely fallen off the radar. This is such an interesting time to be alive and to watch our government in action. Wow! It's so interesting. Anyways, the hot topic, as of, I think, a week and a half ago, I think this was around a week and a half ago, was, I'm sure, if you saw anything at all with the news, you probably heard somebody talking about the fact that there was, in 2002, Mike Pence told The Hill that he never eats alone with a woman other than his wife, and he won't attend events featuring alcohol without her by his side either. So, to some of us, we might think, well, yeah, you know, that's a pretty good idea. That's a pretty good idea. Well, apparently, it's not a good idea to everyone. Which I do understand some of what they're saying. There was an obvious liberal. You know, it's really not hard anymore to say, oh, he's a conservative, he's a liberal. Because the tone and set of the articles is so polarizing. It's so interesting to watch. So the title of this article was, Pence's unwillingness to be alone with a woman is a symptom of a bigger problem. Okay, so out of the fact that this guy just says, look, I don't think it's a good idea for me to go to dinners alone with women. Or if there's alcohol involved, you know, I'd like my wife to be along with me. That is a symptom of a bigger problem. And so this guy, Paul Waldman, March the 30th, just last week, you know, he starts off by saying, okay, look, everybody pretty much has figured out that, you know, Pence is pretty straight-laced. He is not, in his words, a loose, casual, fun-loving guy, which I don't really know what quite to make of that description. You know, but most people were surprised to read this little tidbit in Ashley Parker's recent post profile of Mike Pence's wife, Karen. You know, so then that was the quote. Doesn't do that in the sense. Okay. And so then he follows this by saying, you know, there's something deep, this is a deeply troubling worldview. He goes on to say, he obviously thinks that every interaction he has with a woman is so sexually charged that it's safe to be around them only if there's other people there too. Unless someone might be drinking, in which case even the presence of the crowd isn't enough to prevent something from happening. Okay, I'm not sure if that's the obvious conclusion, but we'll get to that in a minute. Then he goes on to say, there's a little difference between that perspective and that of the ultra-Orthodox Jews who refuse to sit next to a woman on an airplane, or the fundamentalist Muslims who demand that women be covered head to toe to contain the unstoppable sexual allure that renders men unable to control their urges. Oh, so... So, simply saying, look, I'm uncomfortable going out to dinner, not in a business context, going out to dinner in a social setting alone with a woman as a married man, now all of a sudden, simply because he expresses that statement, he's just like those Muslims who are trying to dress up women head to toe. I mean, go on. Come on. All right, so then he goes on to describe why this is so terrible. Over his career, he's had many colleagues and employees. With the men, he can have a complex relationships that traverse work and social context, build trust, and eventually help with their careers. A woman who hoped Pence would be a mentor to her, on the other hand, wouldn't be able to avail herself of those opportunities since he can't even have lunch with her. Well, oh, okay. But that doesn't mean he can't have meetings with her. That doesn't mean they can't have meetings in context with other people. There's all kinds of ways to get things done here. Any ambitious woman can tell you how this is repeated in office workspaces all over the country. The men go out for drinks, have meals together, and play golf, and the women have to be fight to be included in places where the deals are made and careers are advanced. Okay, well, yeah, probably there's some of that stuff that has gone on. There has been. But there may be other reasons why Pence doesn't want to go out to dinner with a woman alone. We'll get to those in a minute. Actually, get to one in a minute. That's a pretty good reason as far as I'm concerned. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, he says, I don't know if Pence ever had a woman as a boss, but his current boss is in a way his mirror image. Oh, okay. So now, then what happens in this article is that we suddenly lurch from talking about Pence and talking about his attitudes towards women towards Trump's attitudes towards women. You know, and he goes on to start making the excuses again for how Trump got elected. This really sticks in a lot of people's craws. He says, keep in mind that Trump very much, after he describes Trump's patterns of behavior, which we all know what those are, keep in mind that Trump very much, he says, got elected on the grievance of men who feel as though they've lost their place atop social hierarchy. So that's the most compelling explanation of why Trump did so spectacularly well among evangelical Christians, despite his libertine lifestyle and lack of religiosity. He promised a return to the patriarchal social order in which the supremacy of men was unquestioned. Yeah. Or there were a whole bunch of people, I'm backing into my garage, like me, who did a bunch of soul searching trying to figure out how in the world they could possibly vote for Pence or for Trump, and ended up doing it because what they saw in Hillary Clinton was just unacceptable. Between the email scandals, releases, between what they did to Bernie Sanders, between the third trimester abortion stuff, you know, there might have been other reasons, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so now, then he goes on, you know, and talks about how this is translating into policy and all over the country, you know. So suddenly, because Pence won't go out to dinner with a woman alone as a married man, this is all coming down. It's all these policies and blah, 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 blah. So, and he goes on to say, you know, just Thursday, Pence went on to break a Senate tie 50-50, the subject denying Medicaid reimbursements to Planned Parenthood. There's no doubt there's plenty more in store. And all of the reasons, according to this article, all of the reasons that Pence votes for what he votes for is because he has this attitude towards women that is very similar to fundamentalist Muslims who demand that women be covered from head to toe to contain the unstoppable sexual allure that renders men unable to control their urges. Yeah, or there might be another reason. So, moving on. there's another article. This one is written by a conservative. How can you tell? You can tell it's written by a conservative just from the title, because the title is so polarizing. Title of this one was written by a woman. This was March 31st, again, a week ago. Maybe it was just last week. Wow, has this changed so much? It is just last week. News moves so fast now. The title of this one is Liberals' Reaction to Mike Pence's Loyalty to His Wife Are Getting More Unhinged by the Hour. I wonder if that's written by a liberal or a conservative. Anyways, the correspondent's name is Sarah Gonzalez. She rehashes a bunch of stuff as well. And she says, though this honorable and respectful practice can logically be seen as refreshing in today's society, in which has divorce rates as high as 50% nationwide, liberals around the country and even in Canada are attacking Pence for the dynamic of his relationship. Okay, Vox published a story where they said Vice President Pence never dying alone with a woman isn't honorable. It's probably illegal. The author of the article, Johanna Grossman, argued that Pence's practice is illegal sex discrimination under Title VII with regards to employment law and a boss-employee relationship. The author of this article goes on to say, notably, the Vox.com article does not offer did not offer in support of their position a single instance of a court ruling that a rule like Pence's constituted sex discrimination in any jurisdiction. In fact, the only court ruling mentioned by Vox.com was an Iowa Supreme Court ruling, which held that an employer's decision to actually terminate a female employee because of the employer's wife's jealousy was not sexual discrimination under the law. She goes on to say that Vox harshly criticized that, but offered no legal precedent that would suggest that their bizarre reading of Title VII has been upheld by any court or by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Then goes on to quote, not to be outdone, Ashley, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Csanady, of the Vancouver National Post actually wrote, apparently with a straight face, that Pence's care to avoid the appearance of impropriety with respect to his wife constituted an element of rape culture. She contended that while she believes that the term rape culture is widely overused in today's society, it's entirely applicable in this quote. Quote, case. Quote, rape culture is a phrase so overused it's become almost meaningless, like calling someone a Nazi on the internet. Yeah, I've noticed that. But it has very clear meaning. The notion, whether conscious or unconscious, that men can't control themselves around women because boys will be boys. Again, there is the assumption that the reason Pence is not going out with a woman alone for dinner is because he might be overcome with passion. That is the assumption that is being made by those who are standing outside this decision that he has made. Quote, the explicit reasons for Pence's restrictions are religion and family, but the implicit reason is that he must avoid alone time with women, lest his stringent religious moral code fall apart in the presence of a little lipstick and décolletage. That is rape culture. Okay, or there might be another reason for it. So the author of this article says she went on to end the piece in a high dramatic fashion, attempting to connect the dots with no real evidence other than her own assumptions. So while Pence's marriage is none of our business, his attitudes towards women are, she concluded. And if in 2017 he believes that they remain, I think women, yeah, women are, they remain such fallen, lascivious beings that he can't possibly be alone in the room, or it says less about his faith and more about the fact that he sees women as lesser beings. Okay? The author of this article goes on to say, after the outrage extended to President Donald Trump for his derogatory comments about grabbing women by the genitals, it is difficult to understand how liberals can muster the same outrage towards Pence for saying virtually the exact opposite. Okay, well, she's got a point. So what might be a reason that Vice President Pence might have for this? Is he truly concerned that a little bit of lipstick and décolletage would cause him to stumble and fall? Well, maybe. What is his concern about going to parties with alcohol? Well, alcohol. Alcohol, if you are trying to live an honorable life, is not a good idea. We've talked about this in the past. Alcohol suppresses the very reason centers that you need to keep your head on straight. And that's one of the terrible things about alcohol, because it causes you to think that things are good ideas that are not good ideas at all, because it suppresses what we would classically call your inhibitions. It suppresses that voice of the spirit within you when you get drunk and you say things that you shouldn't be saying and you do things that you shouldn't be doing. Now, what's interesting about the male experience in sexuality is that we don't need alcohol to get into that same situation. Any kind of a sexually charged environment can do that, can slide us that way. Not to the same extent as alcohol when someone is drunk, but there's certainly some sliding that can take care of. So is that the primary thing that Vice President Pence is concerned about, that when he gets in this environment, even if there's no alcohol, obviously the sexually charged environment when you just have a single woman and a single man together, just that natural stuff that's underneath the surface, is he afraid that he will succumb to that? I doubt it. I doubt it. Is he aware of the fact that there is more possibility of that happening if he's at a party with alcohol? I very much believe that. A wise man understands that. But are those the primary reasons? I have no idea. But maybe there's an alternative. Maybe Vice President Pence understands something of human nature. Maybe he has looked around and he recognizes that he is a man who is in prominent. He has a certain level of fame. He is a man of prominence. And he has seen what has happened to other men of prominence, not because the majority of women behave in a certain way, but because there are some women who are hunters and who go after men. You know, Frank Gifford, bless his heart, a woman targeted him, went after him. I think she was paid to target him. He should have walked away. He didn't. In a moment of weakness, he didn't. Caused tremendous grief, suffering to his wife. Because he was an idiot. Because he should have walked away. And he didn't. So here's Mike Pence, who is a man of prominence, and he knows that there are predators out there. Certainly not all women are that way, but there are women out there like that. And there are enough people that are gunning for him that certainly it would not be within outside the bounds of reasonability that someone would hire a woman to go after him. And even if he didn't do anything, she could accuse him of doing that. Provided he is in an environment where it would be his word against hers. So, you know, not going out to dinner alone where there is no one to overhear the conversation seems like a pretty sensible thing. The other option is you could just bring along an audio recorder and put it down on the table and record all your conversations. Of course, that still doesn't account for any claims that might be happening about what is going on underneath the table. Now, there obviously are going to be some people that are going to say, well, that's obviously a racist attitude towards women. How dare you condemn all women and penalize all women because there are only certain women who do these types of things. That most women are not like that. Yep, that is absolutely true. Then again, most men are not rapists either. But women wisely take precautions. You know, my nephew is married to a fine young woman, really lovely, intelligent, you know, warm, kind, generous. They seem to have a wonderful relationship. But when they were just getting to know each other, she needed to go, or he needed to get his car somewhere, or he needed to go somewhere, and he asked her if she would come along and help him with something. It was early on. So what did she do? She brought along her girlfriend with her. And he told me, he said, honestly, I wasn't offended by that at all. He said, well, that's wise. He said, she doesn't know me. You know? Yeah, that's wise. So I would tend to err on the side of just saying, good for you, Vice President Pence, that's wise, because there are predators out there that could be hired to destroy you. So it just makes sense that you should not be alone with a woman on some kind of a social occasion. And certainly, when alcohol is involved, A, don't drink alcohol, and B, don't be around people who are drunk, because their recollection won't be that good, and their judgment is impaired. And so if you are around them and you don't have somebody at least beside you who can support your version of what happened, that's just not smart. Not in this day and age. So anyways, I guess that kind of puts me on the side of the conservatives in this one. But it's just really, really been fascinating. But like I said, this is old news now, because I think there's been two or three crises even since this was going on, which was just last Thursday or Friday. This is Phil Ferrand. Have a great weekend. I have made it home.